What would you do with your life if you knew you couldn't fail? If you had all the money, all the time, all the knowledge, all the resources that you needed, what would you do with your life if you simply knew that anything was possible for you? My name is Christina Carlson, founder of global Swedish design and inspiration brand Dream Life and author of the book Your Dream Life Starts Here. And I love exploring these sorts of questions to inspire people like you to chase your own dream life, whatever that means for you. Many years ago, I wrote down a dream on paper that would one day bring Swedish design to the world and create beautiful, inspiring, and meaningful products that would bring sparks of joy into the everyday lives of millions. Now that I have achieved that dream, I want to leverage everything I've learned to help you dream big and to create a global movement to inspire 101 million people to transform their lives and transform the world in return. Each episode will dive deep into the power of dreaming and share real insights and practical ideas that you can use immediately to build a dream life of your own, whatever that means for you. Hi there, and welcome back to another episode. First, it has been amazing to see how many of you have done the Dream Life quiz that we have created to help you to know where you are at on your own dream life journey. And it has been amazing to speak to so many of you to work out what your next step is on your journey. I know that all the time slots got booked up really quickly, but I will add more times each week. So if you missed out, you can try again for sure. And if you haven't done the quiz yet, I will link to it in the show notes or just head over to thedreamlifestore.com. Today's guest is Kemi Nekvapil, and she knows the feelings of fear, vulnerability, and powerlessness. Growing up in foster care, many times she had the doors to validation and opportunity closed to her because of her race and gender. Learning to make her own choices and use her voice without apology were her first steps towards a bold, purpose-filled life. Now a highly respected executive and personal coach, Kemi has created a five-step framework to guide other women to build their power through presence, ownership, wisdom, equality, and responsibility. In today's episode, we are talking about the tools to navigate the challenges that impact who we are and how we lead, anything from discrimination and burnout to trauma and self-doubt. Kemi is such an inspiring person, and I can't wait for you to hear this super inspiring episode. Let's get into it. Hi, Kemi, and welcome to my podcast. I am so excited to have you.
I am very excited to be here, Christina. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Before we get started, there is a question that I ask everyone, and that is, did you have a dream as a child, something you wanted to do or become or perhaps achieve or have?
Well, it's interesting because I know that you asked this question at the beginning of the podcast, and my honest answer is no, I didn't have dreams as a child. I was very much in a state of survival, emotional survival for most of my childhood. And I kind of joke that that was why my wedding dress was so bad. I always feel that a lot of little girls dream of their wedding dress from a very early age, and I didn't. So then when I actually got married, I chose this hideous number, which I thought, I wish I'd been dreaming about this since I was three. Maybe I would have made a better choice. But that is the honest answer to your question, that no, I was not a child that had dreams.
Yeah, no. Thank you for sharing that. Not everyone did, and it's a good one to reflect on, because I think we should all encourage our kids to have some dreams, because that's really what makes perhaps your world expand a little bit. And we never traveled as kids. So I grew up in Sweden, which is a very privileged country, but I grew up on a farm and my parents were always working. So my dreams were to travel the world. And that's how I kind of ended up on the other side of the world. So it's all interesting, because we all are on our own journey, of course.
Exactly. And I know that that's one of the reasons why I do the work I do as a coach, is because now I am dream obsessed. I have so many dreams. And to walk alongside other people, especially women as well, to accompany them, to acknowledge, take ownership of, and put life into their dreams is an absolute gift to be able to do that. I think that comes from not having those dreams as a child.
Yeah, absolutely. Always a positive in the negative. So absolutely. So I'm super excited about talking about your latest book, which I'm going to put on the screen here, which is Power, which I love, hence you being here. So why did you write this book?
Oh, it's always such a loaded question for an author. There's probably lots of reasons.
Might take up the whole episode.
Yeah, might take up. Well, exactly. I suppose my first response to that question is, as women now, and I do mainly work with women and I identify as a woman, but also anyone that identifies, I believe that we have incredible opportunities now. No, actually, not I believe. I know we have opportunities now that our mothers, grandmothers, great-grandmothers did not have. And yet, because the world has kind of not been made for women to fulfill their dreams and create lives that they want in a way that doesn't burn them out and bring them to their knees, there has not yet been a way that we get to live in the world where we can step into our power. And so what I found with the clients that I work with, whether I'm working with successful entrepreneurs, whether I'm working with people within the C-suite or not-for-profit, frontline workers, it doesn't matter who I work with, what I found over a period of time, and I've been coaching for a decade now, is that the internal narrative that women have about the rooms they're allowed to be in, about when they're allowed to speak, what they're allowed to go for, does not match the opportunities that we have externally. So our internal narratives don't match the opportunities that we have externally. And I am so committed to a form of leadership where women get to shine as who they are, not stepping into this patriarchal model that we know doesn't even suit men, but it definitely doesn't suit women. So that's one of the reasons I wrote the book. I want women to take up space in the places that we want to take up space.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think the exciting part is that now I feel like there's nothing that can stop us or anyone, female or male, because the opportunities now is just so amazing. I have a coaching program and we just talked about how everyone can start their own business or side hustle. And I think having started a business, you know, 20 plus years ago and restarting a business now, or not restarting, starting a new business now is so just so different. And it's so amazing what's possible now with not having, like, you know, putting your whole world in kind of a risk. It's just very, very different. And I think, you know, for anyone listening, the opportunities now is just amazing. It's just really taking the power to actually make it happen.
And I also need to say to you, thank you so much for bringing more stationery into the world. I mean, what a gift. What a gift. I don't know what your next business is, but thank you for bringing
more. Well, it is journals. And maybe we should talk about doing your journal, but we can talk about that after the episode. But yes, but it's also about helping people. My big dream now is to empower 101 million people to write down 3 dreams and go and chase them. I know it's a big number. It's an impossible number, but I just want to put it out there to think big, because I always do a kind of unrealistic dreams in many ways, because even if I reach halfway, it will be amazing. And I think when we have big dreams, we just expand the way we think. So that's why that number is so high.
Yeah, that's, oh, how exciting. That is incredible. And I 100%, isn't it? Even if you don't reach the final goal or the final outcome, and I'm always talking about, it's not always about the final goal. It is who you become along the way. That's the gift. The thing that you thought, oh, you know, the problem comes or the challenge comes, and you have to tap into inner resources that you don't know that you had to achieve it. And I think by the end of any dream chasing process, you come out the other side with a deeper understanding of who you are. And that ultimately is the gift.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you think big, you then tap into things that you never thought was possible. And I think that's such an exciting journey to be on, even if it's kind of a little bit unrealistic. But I actually do believe, like, if I didn't dream unrealistic dreams when I started KKK, I didn't know anything about business. I had no idea about anything related to stationery and or design. So it was just me wanting to have a global business was my dream. And then I, you know, eventually got there, obviously not all on my own. It was a big team effort. But it was a big dream that I didn't think was possible at the time, and eventually I made that happen. So for anyone listening, I think putting yourself out there is really important, I think. So let's talk about your book. Let's start with, what does power mean to you? Because I think when you hear or read that word, it would mean something different for each of us.
And it is a word that many women don't have a positive relationship with. And that was why I knew I had to redefine the word. So, you know, I've been in Australia now for 20 years. So I'm now an Australian and an English citizen. And so I always go to the Oxford Dictionary, though, and the Oxford Dictionary definition of power is the ability or capacity to do something in a certain way. And yet we witness, and we've been told, and we've experienced that power is only for a certain group of people. And that form of power is about dominance, it's about aggression, it's about power over, it's a scarce resource. I'll do anything to take it from you so that you can't take it from me, and, you know, as it goes on. And so I wanted to redefine a form of power that we would actually want, because I think a lot of women don't want that form of power. And so for me, it was looking at, okay, so if power is the ability to do something in a particular way, then we all have it. We all have the ability to do something in a particular way. Now, what we do with that power could be negative or it could be positive. But this idea that there's only one form of power, it's made up. It's make-believe. I mean, to be honest, most of the world's structures have all just been made up anyway. So we get to redefine them.
Yeah, I absolutely love that, and I absolutely agree with that. So you write about the making. I might say not say it in the right English here now, because I'm surrounded by Swedes. So I tend to speak only Swedish at the moment. But you write about making the shift from external to internal. Can you share with our listeners how you do that?
Yes, and look, the power, I broke it down into an acronym because I know that power is not a linear process. And so I always like to remind women that women were burnt at the stake for our power. And women are still burnt at the stake in various ways for our power, the power of using our voices, the power of speaking up, the power of pointing out wrongs. Women are still burnt at the stake. It just looks different. It's just, you know, social media trolls or the media, whatever it is, but it still happens. So we have a fear of it. So when I talk about power, and what I talk about in the book is that this is not you read this book and you are the most powerful for the rest of your life and you will never feel powerless again. What I say in the book is that as women, we are smart and we will give away power sometimes because that is the safest thing to do in that time. Sometimes power is taken away from us and sometimes it's given away. The idea of the book is a guide of how we rebuild it each time, whether it's that we give our power away in particular spaces or whether it's we give them away with particular people, but that we understand why we're giving it away and then how to build it back up again. So the acronym came out of the word. I'm a big meditator. I've been meditating now for 30 years I've been practicing yoga and meditating. And it's amazing to be at that point in your life when you can start saying decades of things. You know, it's like, oh, wow, I've been around for a little while now. And so one night I went to bed and I wrote the word power on a sticky note. I'm not sure if it's a Kiki K sticky note, but I did write it on a sticky note. And I just remember saying to myself, the clue to power is in the word. Like it's, the structure of it is in the word. And I woke up and then I meditated and it just came to me straight away, which was presence, ownership, wisdom, equality, and responsibility. And I'm not kidding you, Christina, it was that clear. And I just knew that is it. And it spoke to all of the stories that I'd already crafted for the book already. So then for me, it was a case of looking and just seeing how everything I had already written fitted really well into the POWER acronym. And I'm happy to kind of give a little bit more detail on what each of those mean. So presence is being present to what is going on in our lives, what is working and what is not working, because I know that our ability to be present has a huge impact on how we live life and how we connect to other people and how we connect to ourselves. Ownership is about taking full ownership of our stories, the light of our stories, the shadow of our stories, the joyful parts, the grief, the devastation, the success, all of it. Because as Brené Brown says, once we take full ownership of our stories, that's the gift, that's our vulnerability. This is who I am with no apology. Wisdom you know, even as a coach, my job as a coach is not to give advice. My job as a coach is to create a safe environment and ask questions and share stories and mirror back to my clients. I don't expect my clients, in fact, I would be devastated if my clients saw me as a guru. I do not know more about them or their life than they do. So wisdom is about maybe having external resources and support to help you get to your truth and your inner wisdom, but that ultimately you are the driver of your life and you know best. It doesn't mean you're not scared, but you do know if you tap into your wisdom. The next is equality. And I would imagine, Christina, with the community that you have, that a lot of people listening to this already contribute to global inequality in whatever way resonates for them with the resources that they have, time, money, experience. But for me, it's also about looking at what is the equality that we all have within us as human beings, that there are so many structures in the world that tell us that these people are better than these people. These people deserve this and these people don't. But our humanity is equal in every single one of us. And then finally, it's responsibility. And responsibility is kind of my favorite word on the whole planet, because taking responsibility for our lives is the ultimate form of power. And I talk a lot in the book, that's where I talk a lot about healing and childhood wounds, because generally perpetrators or the people that we perceive or that have done us wrong are rarely going to apologize, you know. But what we get to do is that we get to take ownership of that's what happened, whatever that was my experience, and that we take responsibility for our healing, because that's where power comes from. Thinking that somebody else is going to give it to us leaves us feeling powerless. And so for me, responsibility is about, like you're saying, having dreams and knowing that no one is going to do this for me. I have to take ownership of this, and then I can ask for support, but no one's coming. It's me or it's not happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I love all of the words. So I like to actually start from the top, if that's all right, because they're all amazing. I love to dig a little bit deeper how we actually do it, because, you know, it's one thing to know it, but then how do we actually then become more present? I think I absolutely love it. And I think it's so important. And I think it's probably one of the hardest ones to do today, because there's always something that takes our attention. So, you know, social media or whatever is on that phone, all those little things that is, because I grew up on a farm and I'm spending a lot of time in nature, I can now see that so many people, even in this environment, are just so distracted. Because I'm out in the morning here in Sweden every morning for a walk. And I'm like, where are everyone? Because it's like, I love that no one is there. But I always think, oh, it's just the most beautiful nature. And it's just right on the doorstep of our little town. And I think most of us find it difficult to be present. So how do we, can you give us some tips on how to be more present?
No, I'm not going to give you any tips, actually. But thank you for asking. But no, what I will say is 100%, the attention economy is huge. And the only way we wrestle ourselves out is to be really present to what's going on. And once again, taking ownership and taking responsibility of our relationship with our phones. It's a powerful, powerful, powerful source. And the only way to extract ourselves from it is to be really honest with ourselves. You know, I can share some things that people do to be present. So for me, as I said, I've had a very long meditation and yoga practice. I'm also a lover of nature, spend a lot of time in nature. I'll be going on a walk after this call today. The presence in nature, my goodness. I mean, what a gift. What a gift.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I have clients that, you know, just having their cup of tea or their cup of coffee on their own in the morning and sitting in the garden is their moment of presence just to themselves, just to check in, how do I feel today? And one thing I suppose I want to say, going back to this idea of the attention economy, is that we all know that billions of dollars are spent to take our attention away from us. So this isn't about individual willpower. And I don't know if you've read Yohan Harari's latest book, Stolen Focus. So good.
Yes, I have.
And digital minimalism and all of these books, and they're geared up to take our attention from us. And so these little moments that we can kind of take for ourselves make a really big difference. But for me, it's really hard to be present to how you feel and what's going on in your life if you straight away go into observing somebody else's life. You know, if you wake up in the morning and you haven't even asked yourself a question, how do I feel today? Because if you ask yourself that question when you wake up, you know whether you need to avoid that particular colleague at work today, you know, or whether or not you feel, you know, I'm feeling pretty good today. I'm going to have that difficult conversation with my parents, or, you know, checking in. But if you go straight into scrolling, whether it's doom scrolling or whatever, straight away, you are paying more attention to somebody else's life before you've paid any attention to your own. And it's a practice. I talk a lot about practice. I believe power is a practice. Presence is a practice. You know, I check in with myself. I'm very similar to you. I'm an introvert. I have at least 2 hours to myself in the morning where I do not talk to anyone. If I happen to pass my husband in the kitchen, I've had to, I don't want to use the word training because that's, you know, it's a weird word to say you've trained your partner, but he's an extrovert. Let's put it like that. He's an extrovert. So sometimes in the morning, I used to get, hi babe, good morning. Hi. And I'll just be like, oh my goodness, why are you talking to me? I don't even know who I am yet. So now we have this kind of silent time in the morning. And then when I've checked in with myself and I've done the things that I know fuel me so I can be present for the things that matter in my life, that is when I'm then 100% ready for the outside world and happy to be there. So there are different ways of practicing presence, but I think the most common are journaling, meditation, yoga, walking, running, playing with kids. Like if you have young children at home, it may not be that meditation or yoga is possible, but to actually be present to young children is a gift, even though they can be annoying. I have two, they're teenagers, they can be annoying too, but being present to young children when they're playing, that is a practice and it's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. I love all of those suggestions. One thing that I do every morning, there's a couple of things that I do here, and that is every morning I have 5 minutes on my own with coffee. I love coffee. And 5 minutes seems, a lot of people think that that doesn't make any difference, but 5 minutes when you actually do nothing and you just have that coffee. And because I love coffee and I love the silence around it, makes it so special. It's just my favorite part of the day. I just love it. And before that, I've been out for my walk and I do my journaling and my meditation. And I just feel so grateful. And I think that's also like looking at all the challenges that are coming our way, which happens to all of us, is a real gift if you can turn them around. Like we had some tech problem this morning and straight away I thought there's something really good about this. And I tried to look at it. This doesn't always happen, of course, but it's just really good to kind of shift your negative, which often, you know, it's our brain is wired like that, but it's just having that time in the morning just for nature, meditation, coffee and space and silence is so beautiful.
It's so beautiful. And there's something as well that makes me think is that when we had the tech issues in the past, I know that my heart rate would have gone up and I would have got really nervous and I would have thought, oh, this is going to go, you know, something's gone wrong, kind of going to panic mode. And I think we've all been practicing around technology in the last few years in a different way. But I know that for me, that's my practice of presence, that I respond more than I react. I react, you know, someone's going to crash into me or in the car or something like that. But I know that the practice of meditation for a long period of time is not about enlightenment. I'm never going to be wearing orange robes, not even for a fancy dress party, I would imagine. And I'm never going to live up in a mountain away from everybody because I still like connection. But I definitely know that my reaction rate is different because I am more present and I'm able to think to myself, is this important? You know, is this important? Am I going to be thinking about this tomorrow? I knew that if it didn't work, we just rescheduled. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to thinking, oh, this is all a doom spiral and it's all gone wrong or something like that. And that's the gift of presence. It gives us actual sense of peace. It can give us a sense of peace and that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. And that comes with practice as, you know, as part of your way of looking at things. So let's move on to O for ownership. So you already talked about that briefly, but how can we really take more ownership of our life?
Well, once again, you know, different people, different ways. So I can share with you what I can share what I write about in the book. So I grew up in 1970s England. I have Nigerian heritage and I grew up at a time where many middle-class Nigerian families were fostering their children out to white families because of the colonial narrative, which is the best education is white education. And so I knew from the age of five, society, some of my foster families, I'd had five foster families by the time I was 13. I very much took on the message that because I was black, I was less than anybody else. And so that was one of my predominant stories growing up. And so the story that I made up was, I think most girls understand from very young age that being good, being a good girl is how you get love and how you're valued and how you're worthy. So I definitely got that message, that gendered message, but But I also got the racial message, which is not only do you need to be a good girl, you need to be a good black girl. And that meant don't have an opinion, be grateful for what you have, and not in a kind of gratitude journaling kind of way, in a kind of threatening, you should be grateful to be here, that sort of thing. And so as I got older, I rarely shared that I was fostered because I didn't want people's pity or shame or anything around it. But it was a big part of my story that I hid. Also, you know, especially with Black Lives Matter becoming more, you know, for those of us that are black, it wasn't a new movement, but obviously it had global eruption in 2020. I think a lot of us that walk the earth as marginalized people suddenly felt we had permission to speak our honest truth about what it is to have to navigate spaces where you have been told you do not belong, or if you belong there, you have to work harder, or if you're allowed to be there, you're not allowed to speak, or you're not allowed, you know, just so many messages. And so for me, the ownership part was taking full ownership of my story. And I kind of joke in there as well that my first foster family was really into country and Western music. Now, people assume, the assumption has been made, the narrative made up about me is that I love hip hop. I find a lot of hip hop incredibly misogynistic and aggressive, and I just don't like it. What I actually really like is Dolly Parton and country and Western music. And I also joke about ownership is that I would have Nigerian people say to me, oh, you sound too white, or you sound too this. And then I would have white people assuming that I wasn't English. And, you know, by the end of kind of the ownership chapter, I think I sort of say, I will love the music that I love. I will eat the foods that I love. Jollof rice is a Nigerian, like a staple Nigerian dish, jollof rice. And my favorite dessert is apple crumble, which is an English dessert. So just that thing of taking ownership of this is the whole Kemi. And I will no longer, especially as a woman in midlife, I will no longer fit into anyone else's narratives about me. So the powerful thing to do is for me to own my narrative first. And so when I'm working with clients, it comes up in different ways how a client may not be owning their story. An example, I was working with a client just the other week who is, you know, looking for a new partner, and she was wanting to put together an online profile, and she wants children and she wants to be married in 5 years. Like, that's her dream. But she wasn't putting that on her profile. And I said, so, okay, so you know, so you're 36 and you know that you want children, and yet you're not going to put it in your profile in case what? Well, in case it scares them away. Great. That's what you want. You don't want to attract, this woman is heterosexual. You don't want to attract the man who doesn't want to have children. You want to scare him away. So it's that thing of taking ownership. What is it? Who am I? What is my story? And how do I integrate them? So then the power comes in integrating them, not leaving some of ourselves outside because these people won't accept this, not leaving a little bit over there and hiding. Because the gift of standing in our power is that we get to be who we are in the world. And we'll then walk into spaces and places, because I, as a black woman, can walk into a place and be made to feel powerless in a moment by one look, one microaggression. As I said at the beginning, the power then comes to, oh, I know what just happened. I know how that makes me feel. This is the action that I would take if I was powerless. What would be the action that I would do if I'm in my power? And sometimes it's just turning the other cheek. Sometimes I share in the book, it's going into the car park and sobbing in the car. And sometimes it's calling a friend that I know can hear my story and my lived experience and not question me or try and push it away. You know, power looks different in different days on different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. Thank you so much for sharing that. W is for wisdom. You say in your book that we all have an inner wisdom, and this has the power to direct us through our lives. So how do we learn how to trust ourselves? Because I'm a big believer that if you are present, you're much more likely to, I guess, hear or know that inner wisdom. So what's your view on that?
Yes, wisdom. I think in some ways the best way to practice our inner instinct, our gut, our intuition, is to go against it and see what happens. You know, I think so many of us have had those situations where something happens, we did the thing, we knew not to do the thing, and then we did the thing because we thought, oh, they wanted me to, or I should have done it, and then we do it and it never goes well. So I think in some ways, in that kind of, you know, the school of hard knocks, sometimes we have to go against our wisdom to know that wasn't a really great idea. I actually knew what I wanted. Once again, going back to this idea of, you know, witches being burned at the stake, these are women and also First Nations people all around the world. These are peoples who are so present and so in contact with their inner wisdom and their ancestral lines and what they're being told by nature and the seasons, that there's been a patriarchal fear of that form of power. But we know that that power is real, and that is a power that is abundant and regenerative. And that is the kind of power that we want. And that is the sort of power that I believe inner wisdom gives us. There's a sense of, and there's an adventure in that. Like, I love adventure. I'm an endurance runner. I run on trails, and I love that kind of adventure, but I love the adventure of life. Like, I was away recently on my own on a solo created writing retreat. And I just love the adventure of who am I going to meet today? And just trusting my wisdom around who I just felt. I just feel pulled to talk to that person. Like, and I trust myself. One thing I've always had through my childhood, through my whole life, is that I trust myself. And I've had to shift it from the, I can look after myself, no one's going to look after me. So a kind of, you know, coming from a wound. But actually, when I look at the light side of that and the independence of that, is actually, I really back myself and I really trust myself. And that trust doesn't have to be kind of a deep, deep-seated thing. It can literally be, do I trust myself to have a conversation with somebody at the bus stop? Do I trust myself to go for that dream, even if I fail, because I know I trust I have incredible people in my life that will pass me tissues and hand me ice cream or whatever it is that I need to kind of recover from that failure. So wisdom, I think wisdom can create magic. It creates magic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we just have to look for that inner wisdom. And I think that's, you know, again, comes back to presence. So another thing that you write about in the book is about boundaries. And I think that needs to be practiced in, perhaps for a lot of people, I guess, clarify them and then live by them. So how do we set boundaries? And most importantly, how do we maintain them? Because I think it's one thing to set them, but then living our boundaries or living by them, how do we do that?
And that's the thing, isn't it? Because this is where presence, ownership, and wisdom really speak to those. Because we have to be present to, why are we not setting boundaries? Now, for many women, we've been socialized, you know, whether it's socialized society, whether it's family, whether it's ethnicity, culture, that we have to constantly be available to other people. Like, that is our worth, that is how we're valuable. So we can't say no to anybody, but we always say no to ourselves. So that's the cost, you know, to say yes to everybody else means that you're saying no to yourself. Boundaries are different for different people. Like, for me, if I'm working with a client or even for myself, the first step is always, what matters? Like, we have to be present enough to work out what matters enough in my life that I need to protect it, which means I need to put a boundary around it. And I think a really simple way of demonstrating this is that when we send an email to somebody and we get their out of office message that says, for example, I will be offline from, you know, August the 7th until August the 14th. I don't know anyone that gets that out of office and goes, I cannot believe what a selfish person would send an out of office. Most of us just go, oh, okay. They'll respond, either I'll follow up in a week or they'll respond to me when they get back from work. Like, that is kind of a very simple, very clear boundary, because that person has decided my holiday and my time away from work is really important for me. And this is how you can support me to take that time that I need. I also talk about boundaries being a way that we basically wear our dignity on our sleeves. The shadow side of not setting boundaries, and we have all been in this situation at some point or are in it now, is that we blame other people. We become resentful. We say yes to things and then we resent doing them. We're angry. We gossip about people. We go, well, they this, they that, they, as opposed to, sometimes I'll ask a client, well, were you clear with them that you were not answering the phone after 5 p.m.? I think I told them. I'm like, okay, great. That wasn't my question. Are you clear that they knew not to call you? And then, oh no. So then we make assumptions and then we make the other person wrong. It's vulnerable to set boundaries, but it's also really respectful. It respects yourself. It respects the other person. And the way that I love about boundaries, just say kind of time-bound boundaries around that, say holidays and work, is that then the other person gets to choose. So let's go back to the work email situation. If you get there out of office, and you're like, oh, I can't wait until August the 14th. You get to choose, I'm going to email somebody else because I can't wait for that time. As opposed to the out of office not being there, you send the email, you don't hear anything back, you have no idea what's going on, and you just make up stories about this person being rude. So for me, I know they're practiced boundaries. I know they are. I work with a lot of women where boundaries are really difficult, and yet I've never yet in 10 years of coaching had a client come back to me and say, do you know that boundary that I set? I really wish I hadn't set it. I've heard them say, as you've said, okay, I set the boundary and it was going really well until, and that goes back to the ownership part again. That goes back to the wisdom of just saying, okay, so what, sometimes I talk about being seduced. So I say, so what was it about that person that had you reply to the email on your holiday? What was it? And it might be, oh, because actually I'd really like to work at that company and I just really wanted to, you know, something, something. So it's kind of just exploring, why was it that you broke your own boundary? We do it for different reasons at different times, and there's not a blanket. But once again, boundaries are a practice, and they actually give us, they give us more of what we want because they're protecting what matters to us.
Yeah. And I find since I became really clear on my values, it's so much easier to set boundaries and also much easier to make decisions on how you're going to deal with things. Because once you're clear on your with your values and if you live by them, then it's much, much easier. Have you found that as well?
Oh, 100%. And I talk about that in the book as well. Values is part of my favorite work. It's one of the, obviously not the only reason, but one of the reasons that I went and trained with Dr. Brené Brown in Texas is because of the way she spoke about values in the Dare to Lead book. And I do values work through her Dare to Lead program that I facilitate, but I also do values work with my clients. And for exactly the reason that you've said, it doesn't work with everyone. Like, I don't believe, you know, for me as a coach, we get to have these processes and these tools and these questions, and they all form a toolbox for life. And some people, you're going to take out certain tools that you'll use forever. Some tools will last a season of life and then you'll never look at them again. And some tools you sort of pick up intermittently. And for me, some clients, values just doesn't kind of resonate for them. Maybe it's more about a mission statement for them or, you know, something else. But for me, values 100%, they are the compass of my life. And I don't think that knowing our core values makes life easier. In fact, knowing our core values can make life harder. Because as you say, you're then not doing things because other people expect you to do them. You're doing things because you have a very strong internal GPS around what matters to you. And that can be upsetting for some people. I mean, we can also, you know, communication is also a practice to be able to communicate the boundaries in a really kind, clear way, which is what Brené talks about all the time, clear and kind, that clear is kind and unclear is unkind. And it's very true. When we're unclear in our communication, we leave people hanging and people don't know what's going on. And when we're clear and kind in our communication, everyone knows where they stand and then everyone gets to make choices from that place as well. So yes, 100%, I think values don't necessarily make life easier, but I always talk about being able to lay my head on my pillow at the end of the day, knowing that I'm in integrity with what is important and who is important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Love that. Thank you for sharing that. So let's talk about E for equality. I don't even know where to start with that. It's been really interesting because over, you know, since I started my own business probably 25 years ago, I got invited to so many talks and panels about equality. And it's been a difficult one for me because growing up in Sweden, I never ever felt that I was worth less than a man. Like that was just how we were brought up. And also I had brothers and we went to school that, you know, we were boys and girls. So I never had an issue with that. But that doesn't mean that I'm not aware of what's happening in the world. So I would love to have your perspective on where we start.
Okay. For me, equality, this sense of internal equality, I think does go back. We have to look at the kind of global context that we're in. And it's incredible, Christina, that you got to grow up in a country where you never questioned your equality. And I think that is true for lots of people in different cultures, depending on where they come from. But I think once we start looking at all of the isms, racism, homophobia, transphobia, ableism, there are a lot of people that don't feel equal. And that we have had to navigate the world being told again and again and again that we are broken. And if we act certain ways, then we're not even fixable, but maybe we're tolerable. And it's deep work. There's no quick fixes to knowing that as human beings, we are the same. Now, of course, I speak from a place of privilege. I don't have race privilege and I don't have gender privilege, but there are lots of privileges that I do have. So when I say equality, I'm not talking about the external resources that we have. What I'm talking about is the internal resources that we all have. And I have had the incredible opportunity of speaking on Richard Branson's Necker Island and talking about being 100% human at work and what the future of work looks like, to being a lead facilitator for the Hunger Project and working with leaders in Uganda in villages who have dreams of transforming their banana leaf hut to an iron hut, you know, with really clear action steps and goals and how they're going to celebrate. And, you know, if I was to take a picture and I was standing next to a Ugandan leader and to stand next to Richard Branson and I was in the middle, our internal equality is all the same. Our external resources are wildly different. I do not own an island, for just for starters, but our humanity is the same. And it's a lot of work and it's a lot of unlearning and a lot of unpicking for those of us who have had to navigate certain places to believe that our equality is the same. And especially for certain marginalized groups at the moment, where they're really being targeted, like to wake up every day knowing that you're worthy to being on the planet is hard. And the reality is that a lot of people aren't waking up, because that's how hard it is to live in a world that's told that you're broken and there's something wrong with you and that you're not accepted. So definitely not a quick fix. It's, once again, it's being present. It's, where do I feel that I'm not worthy? And then let's bring it to families. You know, I work with clients where they're, you know, maybe, actually, I don't want to say the middle child necessarily, but like that came to mind. But, you know, where the sibling hierarchy, where they feel less than their older sibling, or the older sibling feels that, and these, you know, I work with adults, I don't work with children, but I kind of joke that we're all just 8-year-olds in adult bodies. And unless we do the work to heal these wounds, we will carry them into our lives and we will raise our children with those wounds. And we all have work that we need to do, whether it's big T trauma or small T trauma. And, you know, I never got the memo that we had to do life alone. And it's incredibly powerful to ask for help and support when we need that. But I definitely, definitely yearn for a world where more people are equal. And one of the things that I love about having a 19-year-old and a 17-year-old is that they are introducing language into our world that creates more equality. My 17-year-old is non-binary. They're queer. They're friends. Like, I've learned to ask them their pronouns when I meet them. And they love being asked, and they see it as such a respectful thing to not assume that just because of the way they look, they have a particular pronoun. And I believe that this generation is creating a language for the world that most of us want, which is a more equal world. And it's not about understanding. It's not about, I need to understand before I get on board. It's actually about respect. And it's actually about, we are all humans trying to have our own sense of self and worth on the planet. And why would you take that away from someone?
Love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. So let's talk about the last letter, R, for responsibility. So where do we start there to take responsibility of our own life?
Yeah, as I said, it's one of my favorites. We could go back to presence and just go to that first question. What is working in your life? So taking responsibility for that. I love celebrating with my clients. So often I'll say, so how are you going to celebrate that? And they'll be like, what do you mean? I'll be like, so you did a thing that you're really scared of doing, or you did a thing that you weren't scared of doing, but the outcome was better, or you did a thing and it didn't look how you thought it's going to look, but you did the thing. How are you going to celebrate? So I think the first thing is, what is working in your life? That would be my first question. And to celebrate and to acknowledge ourselves, to go, look what I have created, whatever that is for different people. For some people, it's going to be, I don't know, I've created this beautiful garden, or I've grown my first carrot, or, you know, and for some people it's, I got the promotion. It's like, what is working? Oh, my family life is stable right now, or I feel like I'm being a really good friend right now. Like, what is working? And taking responsibility and ownership and celebrating that. And then the next question is, and what is not working? And taking ownership and being responsible for that too, because they're the little things that start to move us forward in the direction that we want. And sometimes if I ask that question, whether it's to a group audience or to an individual client, sometimes depending on the person, I just ask them to sit with the answers. Like, there's nothing to do. It's just being aware, because sometimes we're not even aware of what is working and what is not working. And we can't take responsibility for things that we're not aware of. And so sometimes it's just sitting to the answers to those questions, which then leads us into a state of responsibility. And it moves us out of the blame game, waiting for somebody else to come and save us. And I'll say that that's been a freeing thing for me from my childhood, reading fairy stories where none of the princesses looked like me. I knew that there was no prince. And although I've got a pretty good prince now, actually, my husband's pretty princely, but I kind of knew through my life that no one was coming to save me. And that has actually been a gift because it's meant that I have been responsibility for the good choices and the bad choices that I have made. I've never pointed the finger at the other person. I've always decided, okay, where am I responsible? And not as a burden, not as in it's my fault, I must blame myself. But like, if I take responsibility, what actions could I then take? As opposed to, I'm not responsible for this. It's like, well, then what happens? You know, are you waiting for somebody else to be responsible? So I think for me, responsibility is about getting really clear on what is working, what is not working, and then looking at maybe what is the first one action that you can take to move you to have that area work.
Love that. Thank you. And I think we've got so many A-type personalities, and I include myself in that, in terms of always looking at the next thing. And I think taking that time to actually look at what's working is a really good thing to do for all of us. So thank you for sharing that.
Yes, and the celebrating for entrepreneurs, especially, because otherwise it does, but it just feels like a grind. And it's like, it doesn't feel like a grind when you can get back and get present to, I created something out of my head. I created something to be of service to other people and make other people's lives better. And unless we take the time out to really acknowledge that for ourselves, it's easy to lose the joy. It's easy to make it feels like a hustle. I don't know what your relationship is to the word hustle, but for me, that makes me feel powerless, because that just feels like a constant, exhausting merry-go-round where you never get to get off. So taking that time and being present and being responsible for what we've created in the world is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a journal in the Dream Life store that is called Daily Wins. So I use that because I'm always looking at the next thing, and every night I fill in my daily wins, and then I plan for my daily wins for the day after, because when you are really clear on what you want your daily wins to be, you're more likely to then have them, and then you're kind of controlling your own destiny, which is really, that's some power in that.
There is absolute power, and that's why I set an intention in my meditation, because it's kind of like you're already casting a flavor into the day. My intention this morning, it was a new one because I just, whatever comes, and it was focused grace. And I'm not exactly sure what focused grace is, but I think I've had a focused and graceful day. So that was a win.
Yeah, absolutely. So this has been so inspiring. And so I think we can speak forever, but I like to finish off, and there's a couple of shorter questions, but one thing we've spoken about a lot is about the practice. So how do we practice this step every day when things are challenging? Because it's one thing to set all the intention and, you know, work through your book, and we all get the information, but the practice, I think, is where it all comes down to. So how do we get into living and practicing what you are teaching us?
That's what it is. It's a daily practice. And, you know, I believe that personal development I'm actually doing a lot of writing at the moment, and I'm really looking at kind of the messages that were given in self-help and personal development in the 80s and the 90s. And this kind of whole idea of do something every day that scares you. And I'm like, what? Why? What? Why? I don't want to be scared every day. Can't I just like look at butterflies in the garden? And this idea of like, you've got to keep going all the time. For me, sometimes the most powerful thing I can do is stop. The most powerful thing is to say, do you know what? I don't have anything left in the tank right now, and I need to go and have a nap. Like that is, they're called power naps. There you go. This idea that continual momentum is the only way to live life, I believe, is incredibly dangerous. And it doesn't, we're parts of nature, we're human beings, we are nature, and we go through seasons of life. And I think one of the most powerful things we can do is look at what season of life am I in right now, and how do I honor that? So within the book, as you've mentioned, there are 26 power processes, you know, 26 powerful coaching questions. And I know that someone could read that book and they'll come away with 26 answers to those 26 questions. But to try and act on all of those answers, especially, you know, especially when it gets some of the stuff is, you know, beautiful, like the power of delight and the power of fun. But when we get into the power of discrimination and the power of privilege and all those things, that's heavy work to look through. And so if you've got, I don't know, 7 toddlers under 3, you might not want to be going there. You know, it might just be, for me, I'm going to practice presence, and it's going to be my cup of coffee, as you say, for 5 minutes in the morning. You know, so I always set up my clients, and I hope my audiences to succeed. And that means that we have to know our capacities, and we have to make sure that any personal growth work we do is based on kindness and self-compassion and not a self-flagellation. You know, I remember working with a client sort of joking about the 6 children under 3, but she did have 5 children, I think, under 6 or under 7. And she wanted to be more physically active. And she said, so I'm going to go for a walk every single day for 30 minutes. And I said, okay, great. When did you last go for a walk? She said, oh, I think in year 8. You know, she was like in her mid-40s. And I was like, okay. I said, so we've gone from 0 to 7 days a week. And once again, I'm always filtering it down. It's like, this isn't, you need to set yourself up to succeed, because that will then create a beautiful feeling of progression and movement. And what we actually got down to was that she was going to try to do a 15-minute walk once a week for the 2 weeks before we next spoke. And when we then spoke, she said, I actually only managed 1. And I said, okay, awesome. How are you going to celebrate? And she was in the, but I only did 1. I said, but you had done none for like 78 years and you've just done a walk. So as far as I'm concerned, you're winning. So for me, it's always looking at what is the one action you can take that is going to make the biggest difference for the life that you want to live. What is the one action? And sometimes it is, I need to leave this job. You know, it's a big action, but sometimes it is, I need to turn off my screen and I need to just go and walk around the block for 6 minutes. That's the most powerful thing I can do right now.
Yeah, love that. And I always say, you can do anything in the world, I believe, but not all at once. And especially not when you have young children, because I think that's just, I often get asked that because I somehow managed to start a business and then not get burnt out and raise 2 kids. And I always look, when I coach, I always look at what they do for other people. So a lot of people are on different boards and, you know, help with their, you know, the school, I don't know, school committee or whatever. And that's all amazing if you have the capacity. But if you don't, then that's first thing to go, I think, because you can do anything, but not all at once. And especially not when you have young kids.
No, exactly. And I think that's part of the thing around intention setting. And once again, getting clear the presence of what sort of parent do I want to be? Not what sort of parent do I think I should be so that the other parents in the playground see me as a particular parent, you know, but actually, how do I want to raise my children? And you're right, because then you suddenly realize, I don't need to make all the muffins. I don't need to do all of the class things. For some people, they love that. That's their act of service. That's their community building 100%. But there's a lot of women, especially, that do that because they feel that they should, and that's what a good mum does, or a good woman. Whereas actually a good, I'm not even going to say there's no good woman. I mean, I joke that being a good woman is a really small box to live in. Like, yeah, we want more than that. We want passionate. We want fun. We want joyful. We want creative. We want powerful, whatever it is, but we definitely want to be more than good women. The world has opened up for us in a way that we can be so much more than good women.
Couldn't agree more. Thank you so much. I want to finish up with a couple of questions. One is, and you mentioned already a few of them, what your morning ritual is. I love hearing about other people's morning ritual, because morning, I think, is the best part of the day. I always get so inspired to try different things. I'd love to hear yours if you want to share it.
Yeah. So I do the things that are most important to me that fill my cup before I meet anyone else. So for me, that is my yoga, my meditation, and my journaling. And I also write in the morning. And I love, you know, I'm in Melbourne here in Australia. It's winter. We have proper winters. And I just love writing in the dark. And sometimes a possum will sit in my apple tree that I look out of my window, and it just looks at me as I'm writing. And it just, I know the possum does not care about me, but I choose to believe that that possum is kind of my editor, just sitting there watching me, making sure I'm getting it done. So that's how I spend my morning. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I also wanted to ask you, do you have a favorite book? And I know you're an avid reader, so that might be, you know, mentioning your favorite child, which is impossible. So have you had a book that made a big impact on your life?
Yeah, see, the listener can't see me just shaking my head, just thinking, why are you asking me this question? This is ridiculous. This is an unkind question. Oh, I don't even know where to start, but you know what I will do? I will share the book I last read that blew my mind. I'm sure you've read it. Maybe you haven't, but if not, I think you'd love it. The Midnight Library.
No, I haven't.
Oh, my gosh, Christina.
I get so excited. I love.
Oh, my gosh.
Taking notes.
Yes. Written by Matt Haig, H-A-I-G. It is, I think you'll really like it. Actually, I think your listeners will, but it's about, without being a spoiler, it's that we all could have made different decisions in our lives. We all could have lived so many different lives. And this book is kind of an exploration of what happens in the different lives that we get to live through this one character. And it's incredible. So that's the book that I read, and I've read a lot of books actually, because I've just been on holiday for 2 weeks. So I read a number of books in that time. So that's the last one. It blew me away.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you. No, I haven't. And I get a lot of feedback from the listeners that they all buy the books that are recommended from my guests, which is so great. So thank you. So we're all excited about that. And obviously I have a book club, so I'm always looking for amazing books.
I feel like I have to share another one.
Yes, yes, please. Yeah, I don't think we ever, you know, it's always a couple of books. So
yeah, well, it's more, I mean, I really could, I could list so many books, but it's more that I have a practice around this book. So I read The Alchemist every 2 years. And I highlight it every 2 years. And it's just interesting to see what resonates each time that I read it. I'll have to get a new copy soon because the highlighting is kind of going over. But that is a book that just keeps reminding me that we get to create our lives. And I just, it's magical writing. So, and Matt Haig, I suppose, and Paul Coelho, there's kind of a, you'll understand why that book came to mind at the same time, because it's kind of a similar.
Yeah, amazing. I love The Alchemist as well. And I think every single time I read it, it's just, and it's so easy to read as well. So I think it's having that as a yearly book is amazing. There's a couple of books. There's a great book that I love that you might not have read, which is called The Wealthy Gardener. Have you read that?
No, The Wealthy Gardener.
Yeah, you will love it. So he's been on my podcast, and I love that book because it's half fiction and half kind of self-help. And I know that you love nature. So it's all about a wealthy gardener, but it's all about like things to help you. And you have all these tools, but it's just a reminder that there are so many simple things that we can do, just like nature. And it's a really good one.
I don't know whether to thank you or to curse you, because my book list just gets, it's like every time you sort of have that initial thing of, yes, a new book. And it's like, but I still have 10 books.
Yeah, I think I have more books than I will ever be able to read. But I think that's, you know, one of the things that I, when I did my first value work many, many years ago, I realized that, you know, personal growth and personal development is something I'm really, really passionate about. So I have zero guilt spending money on books or courses or coaching or talks or anything like that, because that's really what fuels me. And so I'm really happy with that. So there's certain other things that I don't spend money on, but anything to do with helping me living my best version of me, I'm really happy to spend money on. This has been so, so inspiring. And obviously, we're going to link to your book. And we are very, very, very lucky to have you coming in Grow, which is my book club, to take some questions, because we're going to read the book in August. But before we finish up, I wanted to ask one more question. And that is, knowing what you know now, what kind of advice would you have given yourself? And I know that we live and we learn, and you know, we might not have anything, but if there was one advice that you would give yourself, what would that be?
When I was a child, I would say the advice I would give myself is that this is going to get so much better than you could ever imagine. So hang on in there.
I love that. Wow. What a beautiful way I finished this. Such an inspiring conversation. And you know what? I met you in person a few times, and every time I meet you, I just feel like you are such a, you always have fun, and I always laugh how you scare Emma, who's also been on my podcast. And so I when you share that and Emma shares that on social media, it makes me laugh so much. So I feel like you are touching on so many important and difficult, challenging subject, but you always add fun and adventure into your life. So I love that. So thank you so much for sharing your time here, but also all the things that you do to make the world a better place. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Christina. It's been a real pleasure to chat with you. And yes, fun and delight are really important. We have to have them because the world can be a really dark, scary place. So we have to bring as much fun and delight into the world. So, I mean, there's nothing more delightful than knowing that you're bringing more journals into the world. So, yeah, I mean.
Thank you. And after this, we're going to have a chat about how we can grade yours. Thank you. Oh my, how inspiring was that? I could have spoken with Kemi for hours. She is so inspiring. I hope you are as inspired as me and you are ready to shift your thinking about what power is and who gets to have it. And if you're interested to learn more, we are reading Kemi's book, Power, A Woman's Guide to Living and Leading Without Apology, in August in my book club called Grow. And we are really lucky she's going to come in and do a Q&A with us as well at the end of the month once we read the book. So that is super exciting. So if you want to join us, just go to yourdreamlifestartshere.com to sign up. As always, I'll be back next week. So don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Have the most wonderful week and I'll see you then.